Welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast, where we talk to C-level leaders from across the payments landscape. We'll be discussing the products and services that impact the payment space today, as well as trends and predictions for the future of payments. We will also hear stories from our guests about their journeys to the top.
So we, started with a handful of people from the tech and compliance side and really looked at solving the esports problem. Happy to report, since we commercialized this in 2019, we've been growing almost 100% year over year on revenue organically within gaming and esports, to the point where I would say we're probably the de facto solution out there. Anyone that's looking for a third party holistic solution to deal with payouts in gaming and esports, we have everyone from AAA publishers to the largest esports companies using us.
That was Han Park, the CEO of Payment Labs, and he is my special guest on this episode, episode 206 of the Leaders in Payments podcast. Before we jump in, I wanted to make you aware of some upcoming sponsorship opportunities. For the fourth year, we're having a Diversity and Inclusion Month. This year, it is in March. If you're interested in sponsoring or being on the show, please reach out to me. Also, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? We're also B2B podcasting experts and have helped multiple companies in the fintech and payment space launch and market their own podcast. You can learn more at podcast609.com or reach out to me directly at greg@leadersinpayments.com. Now, on to the show. Han Park is an engineer by training who found his love for tech and finance while in the middle of his PhD program. And we can now credit him as one of the primary influencers who put esports on the map and helped establish it as a real industry. Payment Labs is an online gaming and esports payout company. Han built an entire business based on the need to efficiently and compliantly clear out prize pools for gaming and esports events, a niche Han discovered during his career in the gaming sector. Han and I go on to talk about his journey to the role of CEO, including how biotech eventually led to fintech, as well as where he sees the industry going in the next 2 to 3 years as it relates to the global digital economy, online virtual markets, and the gaming esports sector. We've got a great show ahead, so let's get started. Hi, Han. Thank you for being here, and welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Greg. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. So let's dive right in. If you don't mind, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, where you currently live, a few things like that, and then we'll dive into your career background in a few minutes.
Sure. I actually grew up in Idaho, was one of the few Koreans in the early 80s that actually immigrated there. After spending my entire childhood growing up in a very rural community, decided to expand my wings and went to a school on the East Coast. I went to Swarthmore College and stayed on the East Coast for about 20 years, being a serial entrepreneur and investigating a lot of these opportunities. Since then, I've been really focused on being an entrepreneur and really focused in the areas of gaming and esports.
Okay. And where do you currently live?
I live in Southern Cal, LA area.
Okay, great. All right, well, let's talk about the company Payment Labs. So tell the audience what Payment Labs does.
Yeah, so we really focus on a gap in payments currently not being addressed by broader platforms, which is efficient and compliant global payments for businesses to pay individuals. There's a lot of great business-to-business payment platforms out there, and there's great peer-to-peer platforms, especially over mobile, that are instant and fast. But what's really challenging and where, I looked at as a problem that I was trying to solve with my background in gaming and esports is how do you pay as a business to individuals that you have to essentially onboard anonymously, doing it cross-border, doing it compliantly, and deal with a lot of the complications with KYB, KYC, cross-border transactions, and financial regulations to do it efficiently. And that's what we really zone in on.
Okay. And what would a typical use case be?
Yeah. So our roots actually started in solving a problem in payouts for gaming and esports, where the challenge is that oftentimes you don't know who you're paying until an event is done. Based on where the tournament participants place, you're giving out millions of dollars these days, especially the large game publishers. And esports organizers are putting out millions of dollars in prize money and prize purses, but yet they're focused on pushing the next event and not really dealing with how do they reconcile and take care of the winners And it was a big challenge in the industry where I had to personally deal with this. We're working with over 60 different developers and publishers running their esports programs early on, where we were paying thousands of gamers across the globe, everything from $25 weekly online tournament cup winners to $1 million world championship in, let's say, Halo, where, you know, it consists of a team of four that's getting paid out $500,000 of that $1 million prize purse. But it consisted of four individuals from Brazil, Mexico, Canada, and US. And it became very, very complicated process where oftentimes to clear out a prize pool for an event that's already done could take up to 9 months.
That is a niche and that is a unique challenge that I would think a typical payments company might struggle with. So it's interesting that you found that niche just from your background. But yeah, go into, there's a couple of products in your portfolio, right? Prize Payments and Mallow. Maybe speak to those a little bit.
Yeah. So the tech stack, the core is the same, which is just easy onboarding, makes it easy for individuals to go through the onboarding process. So for example, if you're working with a number of different organizers and competing in the same game, but being held by different publishers and different tournament organizers, you essentially have to onboard onto their accounting systems, which is very different from one organizer to a game publisher and very challenging for especially a lot of the younger gamers that quote unquote became pro and won prize money. We try to simplify that process by just putting them through kind of almost like an Intuit questionnaire set, right? Are you an individual? Do you live in the US? And we help them navigate that process so that they can get onboarded only once for multiple payors. Then we focus on how do we optimize the payment routes between the payer of record, which could be a game publisher in the US or a tournament organizer out of Europe or a brand out of South America, and go, okay, as the payer of record in that region, how do you pay all these people all over the globe? And so we are payment rails agnostic. We're not building our own rails, but we're building a network of rails through partnerships. And then the last is what a lot of the companies just don't deal with because of the complexities behind it, which is compliance. Now with privacy concerns with GDPR and California CCPA requirements of how you collect, store, and use that information, along with the tax information and making sure that people are properly reporting, because a lot of it is taxable income and each jurisdiction is going to want their cut of these type of payments that are being made from the business to the individual. We help essentially ease the complexities around it and also mitigate a lot of the corporate risk that oftentimes businesses, even the larger publishers, aren't set up to do. You know, their accounting and finance and legal teams are set up to run their day-to-day operations, not to run a $30 million esports prize pool.
Okay, and when did you start the company?
I started this in 2018, at least the concept of it. Again, you know, I was really challenged by one of my partners, who is also a general managing partner of a large VC fund, who said, Han, if you were to redo this and looked at one of the challenges out there in esports, and especially at that time, esports investments were a pretty hot area. He asked me, what would I tackle? And I said, the biggest problem that I'm seeing, especially running a major esports company, I said, the infrastructure is lagging and the payment methods that are out there to deal with payouts to gamers, it doesn't quite exist. I would try to build an infrastructure or a services platform that resolves this, because as esports continues to get bigger and prize money pools become larger over time, every company that's going to ultimately have an esports program, whether they're a large publisher or a tournament organizer, is going to see this challenge because I'm the first to deal with it because I run their programs. And so I said, there needs to be a solution. And the current platforms that are out there, the broader platforms, aren't addressing the nuances of the industry. And I said, that's what I would focus on creating. And that's how it started.
Okay. And how big is the company now?
So we, you know, started with a handful of people from the tech and compliance side and really looked at solving the esports problem. Happy to report, since we commercialized this in 2019, you know, we've been growing almost 100% year over year on revenue organically within gaming and esports, to the point where I would say we're probably the de facto solution out there. Anyone that's looking for a third party holistic solution to deal with payouts in gaming and esports, we have everyone from AAA publishers to the largest esports companies using us. And so word of mouth has been really great. It was a challenge, I would say, the first 9 months to get the first customers on board. We were just a nascent platform. But as soon as they came on board and they started using it, they became our marketing. They would tell everybody else, you need to use these guys because they'll solve the problem. And so that's how it started. And now that was since 2019. We're growing organically within gaming and esports. But what happened, especially during the pandemic and all the lockdown, is that we saw other businesses that were seeing very similar challenges, which is a lot of the nascent industries and a lot of the digital businesses who were working with a lot of contractors, gig economy workers, a lot of the individuals that were offering their own services on behalf of themselves versus, you know, working for companies. They saw the similar challenges, which is like these global streamers, influencers, content creators, they're spread all over the world. And oftentimes they're unfamiliar with the banking process. You hire them and they see, you know, okay, here's the scope of work. Here's your KPIs, deliver this. And then when they do that, they go, where's my payment? And then these businesses had challenges of onboarding them to actually pay them. And so we received a lot of inbounds from different vertical industries, I would say adjacent vertical industries, that, you know, said, well, you guys are tackling this in gaming and esports. Will your solution work for us? And that's how we're expanding the TAM now to really go after that adjacent verticals that we think are attractive.
So is that adjacent verticals, is that typically like the creator economy, as they call it?
Yeah, so a lot of creator economy. So you got a lot of these smaller shops that are very niche focused on doing branding campaigns for large brands or these influencer agencies, right? And these content creator shops that have a lot of individuals that attract a lot of viewership are pretty significant. But they're also making, you know, what, anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 a month as an individual. So not quite big time where they're being represented by large talent agencies or different types of service providers that do this business. So you're starting to see a lot of these smaller shops opening up and they're scaling very fast. And it's one thing when you're paying out 20 to 30 content creators on a monthly or biweekly basis. But if you're successful at what you're doing, all of a sudden that batch becomes like 100 to 1,000 and then it becomes overwhelming. And so we love those companies that are scaling fast, where they reach almost an inflection point of payments is part of our core business, but do we really want to hire more people and build a payments infrastructure when there might be a third-party solution that could deal with this and let us focus on our core business and growing the core business, which is signing up more brands and campaigns and building their catalog of content creators.
Right. Is your business model SaaS-based or is it all transaction fee-based?
It depends on the vertical and their current payment flow. So for example, with gaming and esports, it's often very discrete events, right? So you may have a large tournament organizer that does maybe 6 to 8 events a year. So we treat those as kind of like batch runs when those events happen, because technically the onboarding starts when their events finish. And so they give us a list, and it really is simple as that. They give us a list of their winners, what they placed, what they're owed, and their emails. And then our system takes over and we automate that entire process. So dealing with 6 to 8, but 6 to 8 events could be a couple million dollars. And so for that, what we do is more of management fee, where we look at and go, okay, we're moving X amount of volume across X amount of payees, so we'll charge you a certain percentage for all the use of the platform and all the support that we're going to do on your behalf. And so that's been working with gaming and esports. But as we go into the other adjacent verticals that we're targeting, we find that it's more SaaS because they still need to scale. They're doing a lot more payments on a frequent basis, right? And so the discrete model doesn't work as strongly with them. And they just want to say, hey, lower the cost of the percentage on volume, but we're willing to pay it on a regular basis. And that's why we have fixed pricing and tiered pricing based on what volumes that they're looking at.
Okay. Well, what would you say differentiates your company from your competitors out there?
Yeah, so good question. A lot of people will look at us right off the bat and immediately compare us to like, hey, PayPal does this or other broader platforms can do this. But what we really do is something that they don't offer, which is the compliance side. Not only that, we have the optimized payment route. So we're always looking at like, what's the most efficient way that the players or the payees, the beneficiaries, can get their money in the method that they would like to receive it. So it's not always cash. It could be a PayPal payment. It could be a prepaid card. Even we've explored crypto payouts. Whatever is more intuitive for them, they get to select the method. And then we make sure that we handle the compliance side, making sure that we protect the payer of record, making sure that all the proper tax reporting and all the requirements around compliance, especially like AML issues when you're doing cross-border payments, all of that is done in real time and we mitigate the risk for our payers.
Do you see, and I'm just guessing here, but I would assume that these gamers want to be paid and be paid as fast as possible. So some real-time payment rails and getting paid as fast as possible, I would assume, is part of the model.
Yeah. And also just they're very digital savvy. So getting onboarded through an online platform versus filling out a complicated W-9 or, you know, some sort of tax form that they've never seen is often the bottleneck. And so we use everything in our means to make that process as easy as possible. For example, like replacement forms, that's acceptable by the IRS, an example. We are using replacement forms that the IRS will accept on as equivalent to a hard copy W-9, but we've digitized that. And so now it's just, as I mentioned, you know, it's kind of like just filling out a question set. And all of a sudden you're onboarded and technically filled out a W-9 that the IRS is going to receive. The players or the beneficiaries just go through that process as painless as possible. And we're starting to see higher throughput. Whereas before, you know, when it was a manual process and you're sending out these forms and you're trying to collect forms over email and sometimes even like Twitter DMs, you know, trying to reach these players where they live, it became a nightmare. And you can see why some of the delays happen just because oftentimes it's the players, they're confused.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, where do you see this industry headed? I mean, the whole payouts thing is, I mean, it's obviously not new, but I think like you guys are very specialized in some really cool niches. Where do you see that headed in, say, the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah. So what we're really fans of and what the pandemic lockdown really showed us, and this is where our business actually accelerated in the past like 3 years, was it's becoming a more global digital economy, right? You got a lot more individuals that are representing themselves as independent contractors or even as small businesses themselves, but they're not established like as a big entity with the structural organizations to deal with receiving payments. Oftentimes, that person just wants to get paid for what they perform as a service or maybe a product that they sell. And where we're seeing is that because of the complicated processes related to cross-border transactions, and now that the IRS and other tax authorities are becoming more aware that this is a bigger piece that needs to be monitored, we see like a lot of these online vertical markets that have like nascent businesses or tackling different ways of doing business on a global level increasing dramatically. Another example, we're really researching and investigating and actually signing up our first customers is like the NIL, you know, name, image, likeness market, where all of a sudden, you got amateur athletes that can monetize their name. And some of them are not going to be signing that $1 million contract with your local Bob's Furniture, but they may be the biggest name in that region that's going to boost the Bob's recognition by being associated with the athlete. And that payment might be like $500 or $1,000 a month. So that's a huge opportunity that we're exploring because we're seeing a lot more of these NIL management firms or agencies, along with just automated platforms that are trying to address that market as legislation approved this.
That's interesting. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you. So tell us about your journey. What is your background from maybe graduating college up through your role today?
Yeah, so I actually went to medical school and was an engineer by training. After a couple of years of working in a lab because I was pursuing an MD-PhD program, I gave my parents a call one day and said, I'm not sure if I want to be a doctor. Being under the hood and doing tissue culture all day as part of my PhD thesis, I was like, this doesn't make me happy. But I was fortunate because this was like late 90s when I was in the field of AIDS research, doing a lot of virology. At that time, I worked for a group called Public Health Research Institute, which was affiliated with NYU. And also in the same building as the Aaron Diamond Foundation, which they came up with a drug cocktail that Magic Johnson was forever on. was lucky to be part of an exciting area that had a lot of funding and a lot of attention, and was recruited by a biotech merchant bank that were investing into drug candidates that really wanted more science-oriented people to help them do the diligence regarding opportunities in biotech, investing into it. And so I got into it and I found my knack that I liked the finance a lot more than the actual doing the clinical research. That's where my career started. And then I ended up joining a major corporate venture arm for Samsung, where I got introduced to gaming. At that time, you know, in I would say early 2000, Korea was the hottest market when it came down to gaming content and esports. At that time, it wasn't even called esports, but these LAN competitions and big tournaments for, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I saw the opportunity and I said, this is going to be something big. And so in 2006, 2007, with a few younger colleagues that were more ingrained in the gaming world, launched an esports agency where we focused on really doing corporate branded events. With my background and my relationships, I brought a lot of different corporate entities into the scene, which was very amateur focused and, you know, didn't have a lot of dollars behind it. And we helped establish esports as a real industry where there could be real impact with not only professionalizing it, but using it as a marketing area for a lot of these gaming companies and technology companies that were endemic to the space. Yeah, I'm happy to say that got my roots there and focused on it. And we were able to exit with probably the biggest unicorn in the space, which was ESL Gaming. We ended up selling that business last year to the Saudi PIF fund under their Savvy Gaming for $1.5 billion. And so it took many years, and a lot of sweat, blood, and tears, and a lot of learnings, but we finally got the exit and allowed me to start really looking at other types of opportunities that can help grow the industry. And so I've been really actively involved in investing into early stage startups in gaming and esports. I'm an angel investor where I have a portfolio of about 12 companies, active as an advisor and board member in some of these early stage startups. Like I mentioned, you know, how Payment Lab started, was doing a lot of diligence for a lot of these early stage and VC funds in LA that were investing into esports companies. And I was seeing a lot more no's than yeses. And so I got it thrown back at me and say, okay, if you're not going to invest into these companies, what would you do? And that's how Payment Labs came about.
Love the story. What are some things you're passionate about? Maybe one business-related passion and one personal passion.
Yeah, on the business side, I love building and mentoring people. A lot of the people that I've worked with during my ESL days and even today, they started out as just gamers. Oftentimes, some of them didn't even go to college. I was really proud to mentor a lot of these individuals when they were, you know, 19, 20, that are now directors and leaders of some of the largest gaming companies. And it's so awesome to go and see when I'm having a meeting, somebody would always yell my name, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you in 10 years. What are you doing here? And it's like, oh, you know, I'm the director of this at this major company. And I'm like, it's always good to see that. And the time and effort that I put into mentor, I can't say they were all wins, but the handful that have really succeeded, they're now the leaders in the space. And they're leading the next wave of business leaders in gaming and esports. And they're also mentoring the next generation below them. And so that's something I'm really proud of, that we built something when a lot of times at that early days, when I was meeting with investors and other corporations that had people that were like maybe 50, 60 that didn't quite understand gaming other than their grandkids had a Nintendo Switch, right? Oftentimes when I'm pitching them either for fundraising or partnership, or they looked at me as if I had like seven eyes and three heads. Like, people are going to watch other people play video games? Get out of here. But watching the industry evolve with our direct input, me and my colleagues, all the work that we put in, and now seeing the next generation of leaders that we directly mentored and really brought them that watched and learned from us, established that. That's pretty amazing. And that's what I'm really proud of. Yeah, on the personal side, I'm an avid reader, right? And I love just absorbing just everything new technology out there. So I spend a lot of my free time, not even just gaming and esports, but just across the industry of what's happening. obviously crypto was a big thing, but it's now 10 years. But now with NFTs and Web3, you go, where's the space for this? Is it a trend or is it going to survive? And all these things, AI, VR, you know, all these things that we've been talking about for years, but now watching it materialize and putting into real play. I love all that on a personal level.
Okay. I think this question will resonate well with you because of your passion around mentoring people. And I always love to get CEOs' different perspectives because everyone sort of has their own story, right? But when I started in payments almost 20 years ago, payments was just an industry. The word fintech didn't even exist. Payments was very much credit card, debit card oriented without a lot of the other bells and whistles. But kids these days, I call them kids, they're going to college or graduating from college. They can actually take courses in fintech and they look at this payments industry or this fintech industry as somewhere they want to build a career. I mean, it's technology, it's finance, right? So you got combination of these things and it's kind of a lot of money's been invested in it over the last few years. So the question is, what advice would you give someone, say coming out of college, they want to go to work in a payments company or in a fintech company, what would you tell them they need to do to be successful?
Again, a little bit of my entrepreneurial experience and background. I would advise them, don't look at the biggest names and don't look to join something that's essentially redoing what existing companies already do. I go, fintech is amazing because technology allows you to innovate, look for something new or how they're going to disrupt or replace legacy. I would advise them to look at companies that are solving challenges through technology, things that are obvious. And it's so funny because directly what I'm giving you an example of is like we've looked at other markets or again, these adjacent verticals where we go, oh my gosh, they're payments infrastructure is so legacy, they haven't modernized to digital payments. For example, like clinical trial payouts. People are still getting, you know, after they volunteered as a test subject, they're waiting for their physical check and filling out these forms. I go, if you're doing a study with 10,000 people, wouldn't you just rather send them like a gift card and be done with it or send them to their Venmo or PayPal accounts instead of trying to collect 10,000 forms so that you can issue a check that potentially may never get there. If you look at an analogous market is like class action settlements. I get those mailers in the mail still that says, go visit here, fill out this form if you want to be party to this action. I go, this could be so modernized with digital payments and you could get a larger participation and class if you were to digitize all this. And it's just legacy. It's been done like this for the past 30, 40 years. And I don't see them modernizing. And I look at those as opportunities. I go, can you disrupt this market? You just need to sign up a case study, you know, sign up one or two of these administrators and you're in the market. And so those are things that we're looking at.
Hon, we've covered a lot of ground about the company itself, about the industry, your background. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Just kind of last minute thoughts. When I first looked at this, we started out as prize payments, really focusing on solving a gaming and esports problem. What I'm really proud of is the fact that even though most of us came from the gaming background, my CTO, Ronak, Mark, my COO, and you know our salespeople, along with the people that we've added since then, I was really surprised that at that time, I couldn't say we were finance or even fintech related, right? Our backgrounds didn't come from that. But we were really becoming a fintech company. And I would say in the 3 years, especially during the down cycle when the economy took a hold because of the pandemic, our team did an amazing job of really researching and building the right product that can, now I'm proud to say that we are the fintech experts when it comes to cross-border business to individual payments. And that's something that we're spending a little bit more resources to market ourselves out there. And really explaining to these adjacent verticals that we have a solution. It's just we're small. We're a startup. You may not hear of us, but we may be able to provide the solution that you're looking for, especially when you're growing.
Well, thanks for those closing remarks. And thank you for being on the show today. I know your time is very valuable, so I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, no, really appreciate the time, Greg. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. And to all you listeners out there, I thank you for your time as well. And until the next story.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Leaders in Payments podcast. Make sure you visit our website at leadersinpayments.com, where you can subscribe to the show and where you'll find our show notes. If you enjoyed listening, please share on your social channels as well.